third parak, third chapter, Yud Tes, Omed Aleph, Sechet Sota, right? Tonight is, I believe, the 12th of November, okay. Which means that it's also Yud Beis Bar Cheshvan, or I guess right now it's dark enough to be Yud Gimel Bar Cheshvan, okay. And we are now beginning with the Mishnah and the Gemara that follows. All right. So the Mishnah continues by saying, "Hoya notel es minchoso mitol kefifa mitzvis enostel esol kli shoris." All right. They are now describing what comes next in the service. But as we'll see, there's a difference of opinion, and which will be expressed in a moment, as to two of the essential ideas. But the way the Mishnah reads right now is that he, who is the he? The answer is the husband. And maybe it's not the husband, because as we'll see in a minute, that in reality it's the wife. She's the one who has to bring the mincha. Okay? So in that particular case, the hoya notel es minchoso, mitol kefifa mitzvis, could mean as follows, that he, meaning who? The husband. Or he, meaning who? The Kohen. Would take her mincha, probably it means the husband in this case. The husband would take her mincha from a kefifa, kefifa mitzvah, we learned. This is a basket which is made out of the fibers, really, of a palm tree. Okay, in other words, it's sort of like a wicker basket, the way I explained it when we saw the expression for the first time. And then what, of course, what did he do with the mincha? He had to put it into one of the vessels, the kli shoris, that are used in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? V'nosto al yodo. And he would put it on her hand. Now, the reason why Rashi says that it is the husband, probably, who is the hoya no teles bin chaso. Let's take a look at the Rashi. It says habal, which in this case probably has to mean the husband. The ho aminun de ein mitzvahs kehuno b'minochos ela hakemitza v'ela. Because we learn that when does the Kohen begin to take over the mincha? The answer is, his role begins from the time when he takes the kemitza. We said that he has to take a handful, right, of the meal that the father has been prepared, and that has to be, he burns it on the mizbeach, okay? So that's kemitza. Now for that, only a kohen can do it. But prior to it, in other words, to bring the mincha, give it to the kohen, this would be the function of the layman, or lay woman in this case, who is bringing the mincha. Okay?
Right.
Yes. She'ein zor korev lamizbeach, right? Because a person who is not a kohen cannot approach the mizbeach. The hagoshaname tekilo kemitzahi, right? He says that first the beginning of kemitzah is to first of all bring the mincha close to the mizbeach, and that already requires the kohen. Because this is, the Torah says specifically that a Zohar is not permitted, and by Zohar they mean anybody who is not a Kohen is not permitted to approach the Mizbeach. Mizor lo yikrav, okay? So that therefore, the Enzor korev la Mizbeach means that the non-Kohen is not allowed to approach near to the Mizbeach. Lo kiddush kli v'yitziko v'lila shetubim shemen kosher bazar. However, when it comes to the following actions that are required for menochas, when you bring a mincha, there are different things that are involved in it. First of all, kiddush kli. In other words, you can bring a vessel and dedicate it to the mizbeach. Welcome her. Happy that you were able to make it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good, good. Must be a little bit oiskamata, as they say in French.
Yeah. You travel 340 miles in New York City.
And the next step that he says over there, yitziko. Yitziko means that they pour in shemen. They pour in olive oil into the the flour that has been brought, right, and has to, and then the next step is belila. Belila means you have to mix them together in order to make the dough that's going to develop, right? She'tu'udo shemen, because the requires the that oil be added and mixed to the flour. He says this is all kosher bazaar. A non-priest is permitted to do all these things. But the minute that you have bringing near then the mincha to the mizbeach and the kohen taking the kometz out of it, and that already, this is where the kohen takes over and so on. All right. No, that's not a balila, it's a balila, the word is. Balila means mixing the oil. Okay. Yeah. It looks like balila, but it isn't. You study the Gemara, you know, Menachos, then you realize that here is the technical meaning that, you know, you mix the ingredients together. Okay? The oil and the flour. All right. So, that's the first stage. All right. So, the way Rashi understands it then is that the husband takes out the mincha from this kfifa mitzvahs, right? And then what does he do? He puts it in the kli shoreis, and then b'naista al yodo, and he puts it on her hand. And then what happens? The kohen meniach yodo mitachteho. The kohen has to put his hand underneath her hand. Umanifa, and he waves it. And as we explained, what is tenufa? Tenufa means that you wave it in all directions. Top, bottom, right, left, and so on and so forth, you know, like as we do with the lulav, exactly. Then it says, Behigish, he brings it near to the Mizbeach, as we said. Komatz, he takes this handful out of the you know, the mixture, the mincha, the hiktir, and he has to burn it. And then the hasher, or anything that's else, anything left right now of the mincha, is ne'achol ha-kohanim. This is something that is eaten by the kohanim. Now here there is a question about the order. All right. It says, hoya mashke, he gave it to drink, the mayim ha-mo'orim, right? Yachakach makriv es mincha, and afterwards he takes her mincha and you know, he burns it on the altar. Now already this, we can see that there's a problem over here. The problem being that first he describes the one, he say he burns it on the altar, right? Mm-hmm. And then now he first mentions the business about giving her to drink, and yet what do we have? The wording over here is what? Then he gives it to drink, and then what does he do? He burns it on the altar. So obviously there's a contradiction over there. Rabbi Shimon over there, Rabbi Shimon says, Makriv es minchasa, he burns the mincha on the altar, that is, you know, the comets, as we said, the kamitza, the achakach, and after that, hoyamashke, then he would cause it to drink the maim hamorin, shenemar, because the pasuk says, specifically says we achar, and afterwards yashke es ha'ishor es hamayim, right? He causes the woman to drink the water. And then the Mishnah concludes by saying im hishka, what happened if he gave her to drink first, we achakach hikriv es mitchoso, and then after that he burnt the you know, the comets of the mincha, in that case it's tesherah. So in other words, it could either be that gives it to drink first and then he burns the mincha, or you could go in the order in which the Torah seems to describe it, namely that at first he's makir the mincha, right, and then after that he causes her to drink. Kashera means that it's kosher. In other words, either way it would be valid. This is the idea. Either way it would be valid. For us to understand this a little bit better, why we have this confusion, we have to take a look again in the Chumash and see exactly how they describe the Parsha Sasota. Good evening, Rona. How are you? having a little trouble with my voice tonight, but yes, Hashem, we will stagger through. Okay. Now, we take a look in the Chumash. All right. Alright. Previously, the Torah says, right, all right, the Hebi Rishas Ishtel Kohen, right? This is the first thing. If we wanted to follow it in the Chumash, then we can
finish. No, all right.
All right. Yeah, it's Parsha, you know, it's Parakeh in Bamidbar, and right now the procedure starts with Tesvav, where it says, first of all, the man brings his wife to the Kohen, right? And then it says, Behavi is Korban Aleho, he has to bring the korban that she is going to, and what is the korban in this case? It's asiriso efor kemasi orim, in other words, a tenth of an efor of flour made of barley, as we said. Lo yitzok alav shemen, he's not allowed to pour any oil into it. This is one of the things in which it differs, right? The lo yitein olav lavono, notice they put lavono, that's the frankincense on it, which the menachos normally had. Why? Because ki minchas kenoisu. This happens to be a mincha of suspicion, of jealousy, and so on. And that's the reason why it's not like the other minchas. A minchas karam, it is a mincha of remembering maskeres avon. What does it remember? What does it remind us of? It reminds us of a possible sin that has been committed. That's the reason why. Okay. And then, the procedure according to the Torah, if we follow it, would be the hikri voisa ha-kohen v'hemidol ifnei Hashem, right? The Kohen brings a near and he makes a stand before the Lord. In other words, he makes a stand, you know, near the altar. Not on top of the altar, but, you know, not far from it. The lokach ha-kohen ma'im kedoshim b'tricharez. The Kohen takes holy water, right, in a earthen vessel. V'min ha-afor asher yebekarka ha-mishkan, and from the dust, which we find in the grounded on the floor of the Mishkan, Yikach HaKohen, the priest takes Menasa Nabayim and he puts it into the water, and then the Ida Kohen is Yishol Tei Hashem, he causes her to stand the forest Rosh HaYisho Nasal Kapayis Midchatz HaZikaron. Alright, so first of all he has to dishevel her hair, right, has to uncover it and dishevel it, and then he puts on her hands, right, Nasan Al Kapela Eis Minchas HaZikaron, this Mincha Minchas Knois, he, right? With the Yad HaKohen, and also in the hand of the priest, Yumei Hamon Hamorim, right? And then what is the next statement? Verse 19 says, V'Hishbiyah Usa HaKohen. The Kohen makes her take an oath, right? And what is the oath? The oath is, V'Abarach Lo Yisho Yim Lo Shachav Yisho Soch Yim Lo Satis Tuba Tachas Yishach Hinokim Yimei Hamon Hamorim. First thing he says, if you have not committed all these things, then in that case you shall be judged guiltless. From all innocent, from all the, you know. And then the Yad Ki Satis, but if on the other hand you did commit adultery, Tachas Yishu Tigmes, Vayitin Yishu, so in that case, the Yishbiyah Kitz Yishu Mishuas, well, and then at that particular case, what does he do? He gives her a curse in case, you know, she has committed, that is, in the event that she may have committed, okay, let's put it better that way. But you notice that the word Shavu is mentioned already twice, right? Because first he started with the general that she has to take an oath, and then he gives the Allah, the curse. So what is the curse? The curse is that God should make you as a curse in the midst of thy people, and the signs of it would be Yerechech Nefilis, right, that your thigh would fall, the Yesbit Leitzoven, your belly would swell, and then these waters of curse will come into your intestines, lots of betten, and it will cause your belly to swell, and the Abraha Yeshua, right? Amen, amen. And of course, we discussed that last week where we saw where body amen, amen, why twice?
One for the curse.
Right, for the curse, one for the you know, the Shvua, and so on, and also to affirm the fact that she has. But she is innocent of all the charges, and she never committed adultery and things like that, and she will not have committed adultery. Remember, there was a whole discussion of what can the Kohen, or what can the husband really, you know, enjoin her? Can he ask her, for example, anything prior to the time that they became betrothed? The answer is no. If he divorces her, can he put any further imposition upon her? The answer is no. We had the problem, I mean, what if she is the Shemeres Yovel? In other words, she has to wait for her husband's brother, in the case of where, you know, she her husband is, was deceased and she had no child, that she has to wait for him, and whether in turn, you know, he can force her to take an oath that during this time she's not been unfaithful to him while she was waiting, and so on and so forth. So these are all the possibilities we have made. And then what is the next pasuk? Verse 23 says, right, the Kohen writes these curses in literally a sefer, which in this case means a scroll, right? And then he has to erase what he wrote into the mehamorim. And then it says what? He causes the woman to drink, right? Right, and then these cursed waters will turn bitter in her stomach. And then it first says that he takes from her the mincha. So first, what is it? First, according to this procedure, first he causes her to drink, right? The next pasuk says that he takes from her hand the mincha kanoz, right? And he waves it before the Lord. The hikri voice al mizbeach, and he has to burn it on the mizbeach, right? The koma takena mincha is haskora. So the kia mizbeach, that he takes the kobetz out of it. The yachar yashkes ha'isha is haboim. After he's done all that, then it says he causes the woman to drink the water. So you can see already that from the pesukim themselves, there is grounds for a difference of opinion, because first it says he gives it to drink, then it says that, you know, the business with the Megillah and the curses and so on, and with the burning of the mincha, then all of a sudden, after the burning of the mincha, again, what do we have? He causes her to drink. So because of this mix-up, yeah.
Could that mean that there was drinking before and after?
I understand. I mean, we might possibly think that way, but obviously, in the Gemara, they didn't think that that was the procedure. They felt she drank it once and that's it. She didn't drink it in different stages, right? Stage before, stage after, or something like that. This is what the problem is, okay? So, that being the case, we can see already that this is a difficulty that we have to face. First of all, we see that Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the Chachamim, because the Chachamim in the Mishnah, what do they say? Takes the mincha, right? He puts it in, he burns it on the mizbeach, and so on and so forth, right? And then after that, he gives her water to drink, right? And then it says, V'achkav bakar is minchaso. So it doesn't make sense. He's following the order, and yet it's hard to figure it out. All right, so anyway, getting back to the Gemara. Omale Rabbi Elozer, the Rabbi Yoshua, the Dora. All right. So Rabbi Elozer said to Rabbi Yoshua, but which Rabbi Yoshua? This is the Rabbi Yoshua of his own generation. Rashi explains. We'll take a look at Rashi. Okay. The Rabbi Yoshua, the Dora, he says, he was an Amora. All right. Now remember again that the teachers of the Talmud essentially are Tanoim and Amoraim. Okay, so who are the Tanoim? The Tanoim are all the sages in Eretz Yisrael who are mentioned in the Mishnah and who taught Mishnayos. Okay, these are the Tanoim. Then along came, you know, those who explained the various Mishnayos, both in Eretz Yisrael and in Babel, and they form the basis of what we call the Gemara, you know, the discussion in the Gemara. So they are called Amoraim, okay? This is essentially the difference between them. So what Rashi is pointing out is that there was a Rabbi Yoshua who was a Tana. In other words, he was a great scholar of a previous generation. So in order to make sure that we should not think that it's that Rabbi Yoshua the Tana, but Rabbi Yoshua, the one who is a contemporary of Rabbi Elozer, so that's the reason why it says the Dore of his own generation. So he says the Rabbi Yoshua the Dore, Rat Amorahu, the Dore show Rabbi Elozer ben Pedos, and he was a contemporary of Rabbi Elozer ben Pedos. So when it says Rabbi Elozer over here, it means Rabbi Elozer ben Pedos. The Yod Hoya Rabbi Yoshua, And there was another Rabbi Yoshua Shehoyah Tana, who was a Tana. In other words, he was one of the earlier authorities, the Mishnah, who was the Bar Plukta, the Rabbi Yonasan. The Bar Plukta means that he was the one who always disagreed with the, you know, with the other authority, in this case Rabbi Yonasan. So Rabbi Yonasan said one thing, then Rabbi Yoshua would come along and say nothing going. It's different. Okay. Bechulei Gemara, right? And we find this machlokes between Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshua in all kinds of places in the Gemara. Behind the Ka'omar, the Rabbi Yoshua, the Dorin, this is the reason why it says Rabbi Yoshua of his own generation, the lo temor, that you shouldn't say that it's the Rabbi Yoshua has zokain. First of all, it's not nice to say old man Rabbi Yoshua, right? Pasnish. The lav orachal, I mean, it's not derech eretz. Orachal is the same as derech eretz, right? It's not derech eretz. Lememrele, right? Hochin. To say this, you know, in this manner. Why? Shegodol was okay mimenu hayom, because first of all, he was a greater scholar, and secondly, he was older. And remember, we have to give honor to elderly people too. I mean, this is one of the teachings, you know, b'pnei seva tokum, right? That you are to rise in the presence of someone with a hoary hair, right? V'hodarto p'nei zokein, and you have to show honor to the presence of a zokein, you know. So, it's possible. All right, so we explained that. All right. So at any rate, along comes this Rabbi Elazar, and he says to Rabbi Yoshua of his own generation, he says, lo seisev akaroch, don't sit down on your legs, literally. In other words, don't sit down. Ad meforash lo leho milsa, until you explain to me this business. What is this business? He says, b'nayin lemincha soto shetuda tunufa. First of all, how do we know that the mincha that the sota is presenting, is bringing, it requires tenufa. In other words, it requires this waving, which, as we said before, is done how? The kohen puts his hands underneath, right? And then they wave it. Okay. How do we know that it requires? So he says, but Allah, what do you mean? How do we know that? The hainif ksiv. It's written hainif, right? So the question is, how do we know that the person who is bringing the mincha is required to be involved in it? How do we know it doesn't mean just the kohen waves it? How do we know that the person who is involved also has to be part of the action of tenufa, right, of waving it? So he says, asya yad yad. Of course, by the olim, in this case, who it is, the person who's presenting it is actually the woman in this case, okay? But it's also a general idea that whenever you offer a mincha, right, you want to bring a gift of a mincha to the Beis HaMikdash. So in that particular case, your job is also to be involved in the by the action of the tenufa, you see. You wave it together with the kohen. So he says, Asya Yad Yad Mishlomim. He says he derives it by a gezeirah shavah, as we would say. In other words, you see the same word in a different situation, and so therefore it applies to this situation too. And where is it? It's mishlamim, in the case of peace offerings. In the case of peace offerings, right, there also, there are certain things that have to be presented by the be'olim. First of all, even if it weren't a peace offering, if it were, for example, even an olo or chatos or whatever it may be that a person brings because either he wants to give it as an adava, as we would say, in other words, as a free will offering, or whether he's doing it in order, let's say, to expiate for some sin that he wants to atone for, in the case of chatos or osham, okay? Those are various types of sin offerings. One is called a sin offering, the other one is called a trespass offering. It depends what exactly is the nature of the offense, you know, that you committed, that you're atoning for. But in any case, one of the things that you do is what is called smicha. Now, what is smicha? Smicha means that you have to put your hand on the head of the animal. The Somach is Yud Rosh Hoilo, for example, the Torah says, okay? So you have to put it down, and that shows you mean that this is what you are giving, and it represents you, really. It's your representative. Now, in the case of Shlomim, there are certain parts of the animal that are burnt on the Mizbeach. We call those the Emurim. Now, what are they? There are your Seres HaKoved and the Chalev. Yeah, right. I mean, these things are burnt on the offering. And they're not to be eaten by the person who's giving the offering. Other things you give to the Kohen, like the, you give the Chaze and the Shokayomim. In other words, you give the you know, the right pokers, we would say, or the breast of the animal. But the rest of it can be eaten, you know, by the people who have brought it. All right, but in the case of Shlomim, again, Tenufa is involved. Why? Because it says so. Okay? Nivolim and Alis, yeah, it says, we learn it with Shlomim. Siv Hocha. In the case of the Sota, it's written, first of all, the Lokacha Kohen Miyatu Isha, right? That the coin takes from the hand of the woman. Well, Siv Hosim, and in the case of the Shlomim, right, it's written, Yodov to the Yeno, right? His hands will bring it. Now, it says, Ma Kan Kohen, right? Aflahalon Kohen. In other words, just as in the one case, the Kohen is involved in the bringing that is in the Tenufa, you know, the raising of the sacrifice that's involved, right? So it is in this case too. Mala Halon the Olim, and just as we know that not only the Kohen is involved, but also who? The person who's offering it, right? So Afkal the Olim. So in this case too, we know that it's the person who's offering the Olim. So okay, so how can you have both Kohen and person dedicating, you know, whether it's the Mincha or whether it's the Emorim or the Shlomim involved in doing it? How can they both do it? So the answer is, in other words, the Kohen has to put his hands underneath the hands of the person who is offering it, right? And then you wave it here, there, and so on and so forth. Okay? So that's how it works for both of them. All right. Heinif, then the Mishnah says, Heinif, right? He makes the tenufa, he waves it, the higish, he brings it near the Mizbeach, komatz. He takes out the handful of, you know, flour that's going to be burnt, and then it says, and then afterwards it says, Hoya Mashka, right? And then he gave her to drink, V'achakach Makrivas Minchosa. And after that, he burns the Mincha. Now, if that's the case, Ha'akrova, he's already done it. Because after all, if he takes out the Komats, takes out the Komats, right? He takes it out. So in that particular case, isn't it logical? Why does he take it out? Takes it out because what does he have to do? Has to burn it, right? So Hochikob. So he says, all right, we're giving over here a general statement concerning what is the procedure with Menochos. Seder Menochos Ketzad. What is the order in which we present a Mincha in the Beis HaMikdash? First of all, Heinif. You have, as we already explained, both the owner, that is the person who's offering, plus the Kohen who's going to, you know, offer up on behalf of this person. They wave it, then the Higish, they bring it near to the, the Kohen brings it near to the Mizbeach, and Komatz, right? He takes out the Komatz, the Hiktir, and he burns it. The Hasha'or, Nechalakonim, and everything that's left over in the Kli Shores, you know, in which they had put the Mincha, is then distributed to Kohanim to prepare to eat, right? And then the Hashkov would go for Kli Gei Rabbi Shimon Ramon. But when it came to at what particular point does she have to drink the Mayim HaMe'ororim, here is the place where Rabbi Shimon and the Chachomim disagree as to at what particular place it takes place. The Rabbanon Savrei, because the Rabbanon are the opinion what? Mashke, Yachakach Bakrus Mitchosa. That first he makes her drink the Mai Mamorim, and then only after that does he offer up her mincha. For Rabbi Shimon, on the contrary, so far he's of the opinion that first is Makrivus Mitchasa, right? First, the Kohen has to offer up the her mincha on the Mizbeach, the Yachakach Bashka, and after that he calls her to drink. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Yachar Yashka. All right. And then the Mishnah said, Im Hishka, if the Kohen caused her to drink, the Yachakach Hikrivus Mitchasa, and after that he, you know, he burnt the mincha, right? Then, in that particular case, kisheva, we say that it does not make it invalid, but it's also a valid procedure. So, in other words, whether we would follow the Rabbanan's procedure or whether we would follow Rabbi Shimon's procedure, each of them are valid. But of course, I have to tell you, from the point of view of halacha, the Rambam paskins according to the Mishnah itself. In other words, the first part of the Mishnah, rather than according to according to the procedure of Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so now the Gemara continues and it says, "Tana Rabbanim, the Hishka." Torah says, "The Hishka." So, Matam and Loma, what is it? What is it the Torah trying to teach us? Didn't we already have the idea of Hishka mentioned earlier? So the answer is Sheim Nimchako Megillo, if the Megillah is already written. In other words, they wrote, you know, the curses and so whatever has to be written over there, and it's already has been obliterated. The text has been obliterated from the scroll and mixed in with the Mayim HaMa'orim, right? The Omeris, and at that point she says, Eini Shosa, I'm not going to drink. Then, Ma'ararin Osa, Umashkin Osa, Baal Kocha. Then in that case, they force her, they compel her to drink, even against her will. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, this is what Rabbi Akiva says. Rabbi Shimon says, why does it say the Acha Yashke? Then afterwards he causes her to drink. Matal Madloma, what is the Torah trying to teach us? Didn't it already say that the Kohen gives it to drink? Elo Leachar Kol Amasim Kulon Hamum the Mala. But after everything that's already been mentioned previously, in other words, he writes the Megillah, right, and he makes take an oath, and so on and so forth. Yeah, the whole business, after all these things, right. So he says, Magid, the Torah text teaches us that Gimel Devarim Akvin Bo. There are three things involved over here which could invalidate the procedure. Namely, Ad Shelo Korav HaKometz, right? Let's say if she decides that she doesn't want to drink even before the Kometz, remember, you know, the handful that the Kohen takes from the Mincha and burns on the altar. So if it's prior to his burning and she says, I don't want to drink anymore, then in that case, that's it, end the procedure. You understand? That's one possibility. The Ad Shelo Nimcha Kol Megillo. And another one is, let's say, they've taken a step further. The Kometz was, let's say, already offered. But nevertheless, what has happened? The scroll itself has not been completely obliterated, and she changes her mind. So, okay, that ends the procedure at that particular point. The Ad Shelo Tekabel El Hashvua. And unless she actually, you know, it says omein, omein, to the fact that, you know, she's willing to abide by the oath that the Kohen is imposing upon her.
What happens if she doesn't want to drink and then that's the end of the ceremony?
Yeah, except that it's a difference of opinion. This is Rabbi Shimon's opinion, okay? He says that at any point it could be stopped if she says, I refuse to drink it. Okay? But we learned just before that according to Rabbi Akiva, he disagrees. He says, if everything in the procedure has already been gone through, In other words, they were makriv. In other words, he would be in the opinion that first the mincha is offered up on the mizbeach, right? And then after that, the shvuah is given to her, and then they take the water and they write the scroll and they obliterate it and so on. Once it has been obliterated into the Mayim HaMa'orim, at this point, according to Rabbi Akiva, she cannot retract. She can be compelled to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim. Okay?
This is after the personnel and the burning of the mincha.
Yeah, after, because obviously all that took place beforehand, but at this particular point. Yeah.
I don't
want to
drink.
In that particular case, that stops the procedure.
Yeah, but then what happens to her? Is she automatically divorced by her husband?
The husband will write a divorce.
Guilty,
yeah, yeah. Husband writes a divorce and she loses the ksubah. That's it. Yeah. There's a monetary penalty, you see, that's involved. But he divorces her and that's it. And then she's free to marry anybody. Except the coin. Okay. That we understand. Okay. So,
is she allowed to marry the fellow with whom she was accused to have had relations?
No, that's another thing. Because, I mean, if they could prove adultery, in that case, right. Because she's Asura Labala, she's prohibited to her husband, and Asura Labala also to her paramour, she's prohibited. Okay? Now he says, Rab Shimon Latame. Rab Shimon is consistent tonight.
Give me the word.
First of all, the first stage is Achelo Korv HaKomets. Okay, that's number one. The next one, Achelo Nimcha Komegila. Okay, that's the second one. And then the Achelo Tekabi Lechishvua. That's three. All right. Well, now we're going over this again. All right, remember it said Achelo Korv HaKomets. All right. Okay, so now he's breaking it down. He's analyzing it further. He said Achelo Korv HaKomets. Right, so Rab Shimon Atamei, and Rab Shimon is being consistent with his opinion. The Omar, he says, Makar is Minchaso. The first, they are Makar her Mincha, the Achakach Mashke, and only after that do they cause it to drink. Okay, so in that case, we see, that as long as the Komets has not been offered and she retracts at that point, then according to Rab Shimon, that's it, that's the end of the procedure. Achelo Nimcha Kamigila, right? And how about the next one? So there's no question. I mean, that as long as the Megillah has not, the scroll, the writing has not been completely erased, and then in that particular case. So Elamai, right? Mashkelo. But if it has been completely erased, right, then they could cause her to drink, because this, as we said, this is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva up above, and apparently this is going to be considered very seriously as something that we have to enforce. So Amar Rav Ashi, he says, Lo Nitzricha, he says, this business where it says Achelo Nimcha Megillah, he says, this we need for what? Sherishumo Nikor. Okay. As long as there is still writing on the Megillah that is recognizable, so the job hasn't been done yet, because it has to be completely obliterated. And how about the other one, Shalot Kabi Leda Hoshavua, right? And until as long as she has not accepted the oath upon herself, so Mishtahu Delo Shasya, right? So she's not required to drink, but her michtav kaspilo. But do we write the Megillah for her if, let's say, prior to that she refuses to drink? Omar Rova, didn't Rova say Megillah sota she kaspo kodem shne kabila lechu shavua, that writing the sota's scroll prior to the fact that she is willing to submit to the oath, Layosav lo klum, has absolutely no value whatever. She has to, in other words, take the oath to begin with, and then only then does the Kohen write the Megillah. So, and if she refuses to take the oath, then what? Then that's it. That's the end of the procedure. Kedin naspa, which means that, you know, he brings her for nothing in that particular case. In other words, the husband brings her for nothing. Why do we have to go through a whole procedure only to wind up at this particular point where she says, that's it. That's the end. I don't want anything more with that. So, anyway, they say, what is the reason that we have such a difference of opinion? He says, there are three different things written in the text. What's written? First of all, it's written vehishka, right? Kama. First of all, we have the word vehishka. And then, what do we have? Yachar, yashke. And then, again, it says, and afterwards, yashke, right? And then we have the word vehishka written a third time, vehishka basra. Okay? And there's a final. So, it's hishka, yashke, ishka. Okay? So why do we need all three? So he says, Rabbanon, that would be, you know, the sages who follow the Mishnah at the beginning of the Mishnah over there, Savre, they are the opinion, the Hishka, Kama, the Gufo. This we find very often, that in the text of the Talmud, where you have the same word repeated several times. So we say, the first time is the Gufo, as it says over here. What does the gufo mean? The gufo means that we learn that there is such a thing as a mitzvah that's involved. Okay? So for counting purposes, we don't count that. That tells us that there is a general principle involved. Then, if the same word is repeated again and again, then there's cause for drasha. I'll give you an example. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, also in Sukkos, brings the business about Basukos Teisfu Shivas Yomim, right? Kol Ezrach Yisrael Yeshu Basukos, the man, Man Yeduda Esem Ki Basukos of Shavtis Bei Yisrael, okay? So in other words, how many times is the word Sukkos mentioned over there? It's mentioned three times, okay? And not only is it mentioned three times, but twice it's written, as we would say, Choser, in other words, without a vav. And the third time it is written with a vav. So, why is the first Basukos written? The answer is because the teaches that there is what? That there is a mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah in order to celebrate Yontif. But why do we have the others? So, the answer is because of the fact that we learn from this how many walls make a valid sukkah. Okay? Now, if you have two, if we have one that's left over, you know, that's written with a vav, in other words, full, right? And we have another one without, so it means that how many we have? It's one, two, three, right? So in other words, the minimum for a valid sukkah is how much? Three. And of course, then we have another problem, and that is what they call a halacha l'moshe b'Sinai, that there's an old tradition that says the third wall doesn't have to be 100%. But it could be smaller and so on. Okay. So, over here again, getting back over here, what is the first, the Hishka? That's to tell us that there is such a thing in the case of the Sota, where the Kohen is going to be required to do what? To cause him to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim. Okay? Okay, so the Hishka Kama Lagufa Shemashka. In other words, that tells us that there is such a thing that the Kohen has to give her the Mayim HaMa'orim to drink. The Yachar Kach Makrivis Mincha. So, and after that, after he's given her to drink, then what does he do? He burns the Mincha. And then the Yachar Yashke, right? So, if that's the case, then why does it say, and afterwards he causes her to drink? He's already given her to drink, no? Mm-hmm. So he says, Minboile, this last verse has to, we need it in order to teach us what? Le Sherishimon Nikar, right? To teach us the fact, he says, we need it to make sure that the water has completely obliterated all the writing on the scroll, that if any writing still remains on the scroll, you cannot proceed with the ritual. Okay? And the Hishka Basra, and the last one that we had, right? Hishka for the main thing, Yashka for the scroll, and the final, the Hishka, She'im Nimcha Kol Megillah, that if at this point all the writing has been obliterated, right, from the scroll, the Omeris, and she says, Eini Shosa, that I refuse to drink, then the Ararin Osa, then they force her, Umashka Osa Bal Kocha, and they cause her to drink even against her will. The Rab Shimon, how about him? So far he was of the opinion, okay, the Achar Yashke, that's the Gufo, that's to teach us that afterwards he causes her to drink. When does it happen? Shemakrivis Mincha. So firstly, it has to be Makriv the Mincha. The Yachakach Mashke, right? And after that, he causes her to drink. The Hishka Kama, why do we have the first the Hishka written then? Sheim Hishka, Yachakach Hikrivis Mincha, so Kishera. That's to teach us that if he didn't follow the procedure that Rabbi Shimon approves of, but instead he caused her to drink first, right, and then he was marked with the mincha, then in that particular case it still is valid, right? And how about the Hishka Basra, the last one of the Hishka? It says she'im nimcha kol megillah. Here, the last the Hishka in this particular case actually would be in agreement with what Rabbi Akiva and the others said, that namely she'im nimcha kol megillah, if the scroll was completely obliterated, and at that particular point, the Yomra, and she said, Eini Shosa, I'm not going to drink, then Ma'arin Usodam Hashkin Usabal Koha. Then in that case, they force her, they compel her to drink, even against the will. Barabonon, and how about the sages? Why did they disagree, you know, as far as the interpretation of, you know, the Hishka, and so on and so forth? So they say, b'di eved le'posachra. The reason is that the Torah is not going to begin immediately with the assumption that what? That if the procedure doesn't follow my way, then it's okay, valid the other way. Because b'di eved always comes in when? After you've done something, and then you say, okay, if it's already been done, so maybe it can be justified too, or maybe considered valid too. But the Torah doesn't start immediately by saying that b'di'evid, if you didn't do what I said, so the Sofa Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva said, Mashkin Yisrael Baal Tocha, right? Did Rabbi Akiva really say that they can force her to drink against the will? The Hor Tanya, we learned that Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Klavas Shel Bazel Matil Nesech Piha, that they put a clavis, in Latin really means a nail. Now, obviously, they're not going to put a nail in her mouth. But as Rashi explains, it's sort of a tongue, okay? They put like a pair of tongues, you know, in order to force her mouth open. Matil Nesech Piha, She'im Nim Chakot Megillah. If the scroll has been completely obliterated, as we said, the Yomran at that point, she says, Eini Shosa, then Ma'ari Nosa Mashkin Nosa Bal Kocha. And Rabbi Akiva, well, so Rabbi Akiva says, no, I disagree. Although upstairs, at the top of the page, they said this was his opinion, if you remember. Now, all of a sudden, here they quote Rabbi Akiva as saying, no, that's not, that's somebody else who's saying it. Rabbi Yehuda is saying it, right? And what does Rabbi Akiva say? He says, Klum onu tzrichim ila vodka. V'halo b'duka v'yamedes. Look. He says, why do I have to force her to drink? The whole purpose of the drinking is what? In order to test her out, I mean, to see whether, you know, she has committed adultery or not. Right. If she says, I refuse to drink, then that's it. That's right. Of course, it's a very serious business. There's no question about that. This is why they felt, you know, the other opinion was that if it has been washed away, exactly, then in that particular case, you know, okay.
Go ahead with the procedure.
Right. Ela achelo korav hakometz, But what Rabbi Akiva says is, until the point where the chometz has not been offered on the mizbeach, right? Yechol alatzur bo, right? She can retract. She can say, "I refuse to do it." Mishakorav hakometz eino yechol alatzur bo. But when the chometz has already been offered on the mizbeach, then she can no longer retract, or she has to go ahead. So obviously, there's a conflict over here, because first case, Rabbi Akiva was mentioned as saying we can force her as far as, you know, if it's obliterated. Now he says if it's obliterated, what does she have to be tested for? She, that's like prima facie evidence, you know, that she says. So, v'litameh, he says, you go according to your opinion, teach her the chor, right? He go for. If that's the case, that's a kasha, the whole business. Mishakorav hakometz, enu yichud alachzebo? You're telling me that once they burn the comments, she can no longer retract? If she retracts even at that point, isn't she in the same category as saying, look, I admit I did it, and so on? So he says, lo kasha, it's not a kasha. Why? Ho, the kohadra bo machmas v'siso, ho, the kohadra lo machmas v'yusa. He says, there are two possibilities. When she says, eini shoisa, I don't want to drink. What? It may be machmas resisa. Resisa means trembling. Maybe she's so frightened by the whole experience that she doesn't want to undergo it, even though she is innocent. You understand? Or the other possibility is that she is so brius. In this case, she's so she's so brazen. You know, she's so sure of herself, even though she has committed adultery. Right? So that she doesn't want to admit it. She's willing to undergo because she's sure that she can get away with it. Okay? So, v'hochi ka'abar. And then we explain as follows. Kol shemach mas b'riyusa kalal kalal le'shasya. Then in that case, if this is her attitude, namely she's so sure of herself that she can get away with it, then in that case, we're not going to compel her to drink. Okay? Right. You're absolutely right. Right, right. So in that case, what? Then we don't compel her to drink. But machmas resisa, if we see, I mean, that she's trembling, she's shaking all over, and so on, I mean, and so in that the case, ach lekor hakometz, then as long as the, you know, the handful of the mincha has not yet been offered on the altar, da'akate lo imchak megillah, right? And at this particular point, also the megillah has not been obliterated as yet, so inami imchak megillah. Or, even assuming that the megillah has been obliterated, the shelo kedin, and it was not according to the right procedure, avid kohanim demachake, that, you know, the kohanim obliterated. So motza hadrabo, she can retract. But mishikorav hakometz, dividin of it kohanim, but once the kometz is burnt on the altar, and the kohanim have followed the correct procedure in doing it, the mechake, you know, that they obliterated it, so motza hadrabo, that she cannot retract. So what do we find? We find that it's kasha the Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbi Akiva. One opinion of Rabbi Akiva disagrees with another opinion quoted in the name of Rabbi Akiva. Right?
Contradiction?
Yeah, it's a contradiction.
But that doesn't mean he contradicts himself. Maybe they quoted him correctly.
So this is what the Gemara is going to say. You got the right thing. So it says, Hasama Mamechika Me Akva. In one case he says, that what is it that you know, can stop the procedure? The answer is the obliteration, right? The hachomar, and here he says it's not the obliteration, but it is instead whether the comet has been burnt on the altar or not. So the answer is terei tanoi v'adim Rabbi Akiva. So there are two different traditions. All of them quoted in the name of Rabbi Akiva, but obviously they can't all be correct.
They contradict one.
Right, they contradict each other. So anyway, the Gemara asked the following question. Says, Boilam, question was asked. Umra eini shoysa. Machbas for Yusuf. Okay? The woman says, I refuse to drink. Why? Because she's sure of herself. The chazwa mi umra shoysani. And then afterwards she says, wait, I changed my mind. I do want to drink. Mahu. So, kevin the umra eini shoysa to be'ani ka umra. So, are we to say that if she said, I'm not drinking, right? So the interpretation is that I am Temeya, in other words, I have committed adultery, right? Literally impure, okay, unclean, right? But that means in this case, you know, that she was actually guilty of it. And inasmuch as she has proclaimed her adultery, then she can no longer retract and insist that she wants to drink the Maimamorim after all. Odimu, are we to say, Kevan the Umra Shosa Ani, from the moment that she says, I want to drink, Gadyadata, then she is revealed, the Machmas Biyusuhi the Umra. Then she reveals about the fact that it was because of trembling of fear and so on that she said, I don't want to. But now she says, I want to. So is it okay? So the answer is Taiko. They don't know. We don't know.
What do they do?
That's a good question. They don't know what to do at this point.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. I can think of a very nasty husband who accuses his wife unnecessarily,
yeah.
And she put her through all that. That alone would scare the hell out of her, and she said, "I don't want any more part of this thing."
Right, right, correct.
And she could be very innocent.
Yeah, and when we studied the first parak, I mean, we had that mentioned as a possibility.
Sure,
right. That he could be a real paskudnyak,
right.
And so forth. No, so that's one of the reasons.
He wants to get rid of her or something like that.
Well, they abolished the whole deal afterwards.
He wants to save
Kisuba,
that's right.
He wants to save Kisuba, right. He's the skin flint.
Exactly.
Not even there, but he wants to give her a bad name. I think that's
a bad name, too.
I think that's one of
them. Okay, now the last segment that we have left before the Mishnah is that. Excuse me. Yeah. Omar Abu Shmuel, so Shmuel's father said, Sora Shayite Marlis of Hamayim. He says, the coin has to put also something that's bitter tasting into the water. It wasn't mentioned, but he says it should be added to
you
it.
Put the
why?
Dust in already and everything else.
Yeah, with the
enough.
Dust and the obliteration and
enough.
So on and so forth. It's not bitter enough. So he says, let's put something bitter in there.
My
Tama, he says, for what reason? The Yomar Krah, because the Pasuk says, May Hatmorim, right? Shemorim Kvar. If you take a look at the Pasuk that I read before, May it's May Hatmorim Hamaorarim. Now, normally we speak about Hamayim Hamaorarim, which would mean the waters that give a curse, okay? But it says over here in Pasuk Chof Dalet, Pasuk 24, the water which is bitter, which causes the curse. So because it says the word bitter, morin, besides me'orarim, so this is why Shmuel's father said that you have to add something which is bitter also. So in order to fulfill that. Shemorim kvar. In other words, the water is already bitter. Okay. Rashi says, Koda mechika. Take a look, Shemorim Kor. He says, before they obliterate the text, right, it has to be done already. Why? Alma, we see Mahmaz Dovor Acher Heimor. We see that the waters are bitter for some other reason, in other words, for something that has been added to it, right? The Ein Merira Al Shem Klala. Al Shem Kilalas B'dikosam. And they're not called Mayim Morim because of the fact that you know, a curse is going to be used, you know, in order to test her. The whole mekami mechika love and a midrash mitzvah, because before the obliteration, they have no, the water has no effect. So, according to him, first you have to add something bitter into it in order to give it a bitter taste. Then you obliterate the Megillah and so on and so forth. Okay, so we shall stop at this particular point and continue with the new Mishnah next week on Daf Chof.
When was this procedure stopped?
We are now on Daf Chof, Omid Aleph. Tonight is the 19th of November. It was Yutes Cheshvan during the day. It is now Chof Teshvan. So we are ready to continue now from where we left off. Okay. The Mishnah is really, to a certain extent, to begin with, a continuation of something that we learned in the Gemara. Remember, we learned in the Gemara about what happens concerning the process of obliteration. At what point can the woman be forced, for example, to drink the Mayim HaBa'orim, and under what circumstances can this forcing take place? So now we reach the Mishnah itself, which speaks about that, and we'll see that there are different stages in the process. The Mishnah begins by saying, Ad shalo nimchaka ha-megilo, omro eini shoso, megiloso nignesu, zamin chosum es pazeres al hadeshen. Okay? The Mishnah says that if the scroll upon which the Kohen wrote the various curses has not been obliterated yet, and at that point she says, I'm not going to drink, then what happens at that point? The answer is that the scroll which has been written has to be put into the Geniza, in other words, it has to be buried, cannot be used anymore. And also the mincha, remember that she had to bring this minchas kenos. So what do you do with it? So the answer is that it has to be scattered, but where? It has to be scattered the place where they burned the refuse, so to speak, you know, in the Beis HaMikdash. This is Makom Hadeshim, okay? And the Mishnah points out very carefully that the scroll which was written for her cannot be used in order to perform the same test, you know, upon a different sota. Because we see immediately over here that there is like a parallel to a get, because we know that a get, even the Gemara mentions in get, and it's going to be referred to over here again. It mentions the fact that let's say that there were two men who had the same name, right, and they were married to two wives who had the same name. All right, let's say Abraham and Sarah. Okay. So let's say there were two Abrahams and two Sarahs. Abraham number one decides that he wants to divorce his wife Sarah. Okay, so he comes best in the highest of them, and then he orders, you know, the sofer to write a get for him and so on, and naturally has to put in also the name of the city, the date, and everything else. Okay, all of a sudden he changes his mind at the last minute and decides that he wants to hang on to her. He doesn't want to give her the get after all. Okay, so another Abraham, same town, same day, says, well, I'll tell you what, yeah, we have the same name, our wives have the same name, and I feel like divorcing my wife. I'll use your get for it. Okay, so that being the case, the question is it valid? The answer is, of course, no, cannot be valid. Why? Because we have a pasuk in the Torah where it deals with the whole question of divorce. One of the most important phrases that we have on there is v'chosav lo sefer karisus, that he has to write for her a bill of divorcement, literally a bill which cuts off the relationship. Okay, and as the Gemara says, law means lishma. It has to be for her only and not for anybody else. All right, so the Mishnah over here is working on the same assumption, that if the Megillah was written for, you know, in order to test this sota, so, and then she you know, she changes her mind, she says, but she refuses to drink from it. So we cannot decide to use the same scroll. After all, there are no names written in the scroll. You have to realize that. Not in this, just psukim, right, taken from the Torah. So the man, some other person can come along and say, you know what, I'm jealous of my wife and so on and so forth, and I want to put her to the test, and since you have a good scroll, I'll be happy to use your scroll and so on, and that's it. No, it doesn't work that way. Okay, so that the scroll has to be put away, buried literally in the Knesset, and also the mincha that had been prepared for her also has to be burnt in the you know, the deshen, where the refuse, so to speak, is burnt, you know, the ashes and so on and so forth, is deposited over there, and it cannot be used in order to perform the process of the test of the sota with another woman. Now, that's one stage. Let's take another stage. Nimchaku ha-megillah. Okay? What happens if the scroll now has been completely obliterated, as we said? Because remember we said before that unless you know, the writing is completely obliterated, it's still not valid. Okay? But let's say now that the writing has been completely obliterated. The Umran, at this point, she says, Tameya Ani. In other words, I confess that I committed adultery. So in that case, what do you do with the water that has been prepared? So the Mishnah says, Hamayim Nishpachim. Then in that case, the water is spilled out. Okay? Where is a different problem? But, you know, they had a place in the Beis HaMikdash where they were able to spill out water. Okay? So the water is poured out over there. And minchasim is pazeres al beis hadeshen. Again, as we said, the similar, you know, in the preceding part of the Mishnah, the mincha that you know, she had brought is scattered in the beis hadeshen, so that it cannot be used. Okay. Now, stage number three, nimchako hamegila. Okay, this is similar to stage number two. The Megillah has already been obliterated, right? The Umra, and she says, this time she doesn't say, Tameya Ani, right? She doesn't say, I am defiled, in other words, I have committed adultery, but she says, Eini Shosa, I don't want to drink it. Okay? Now this we discussed last week a little bit, and we saw that there was a question as to why she says, Eini Shosa. Is it because she really has committed adultery, and that's why she doesn't want to do it? Or is it because, as we said last week, Mishum Bi'usa? In other words, she's afraid, she's terrified, and that's why she says, I'm not going to drink it. And then we had the question at the top of this page, if you remember, where it says, you know, let's say first she says, Eini Shosa, and then she says, yes, I'm willing to drink it, and so on. So the question is, do we say that she changed her mind because she was terrified before and now she's not afraid, she was willing to go through with it? Or are we to say that for some reason or other, maybe she decided, it's not going to have any effect upon me? And at that point, what did the Gemara say? The Gemara said, take her. We don't have an answer for that. Okay? So, at any rate, over here, all right, the Megillah has been obliterated. And she says, I don't want to drink it. So in that case, this is where we learned Ma'arin Oysa Mashkin Oysa Balkor, that they can compel her to drink even if she is unwilling to do so. Okay? In other words, she did not say that she is the mayor. She says simply, I don't want to drink. So in that case, they say, look, we've gotten this far, then you have to go ahead with the final stage and to drink it. Okay. Now, the Mishnah now continues and it says, Eino maspekes lishtois, she has hardly finished drinking, ad sheponeha marikos, and at this particular point, her face turns green, v'yeneha boltos, and her eyes bulge, right? V'him is malez gidin, and she becomes full, that is probably her face and so on, becomes full of veins that stick out and so on. The Haim Omrim, And at this point, the people who were there standing by say, Otsiyuha, take her out of the Beis HaMikdash, take her out of the Azorah, which is actually, where is she standing? She's in the East-West Doshim, okay? So they say, take her out of there. Why? Shelo titameh ha'Azorah, so that she should not cause the Azorah to become defiled, right? Because what is the fear? Fear is obviously, let's say, that she should die or something like that. Although we'll see that there's a different fear that's involved. It may not be a fear of death, but it may be a fear even that she may suddenly have a period because of the terror or something like that, and the defilement would happen as a result of that. Okay.
What if she chucked?
Huh?
What if she threw up?
She threw up. That's not mentioned. But obviously it's not... Yeah, I understand, Sam. It's okay. Not a very nice possibility either.
Okay.
But in any case, if these physical... characteristics suddenly break out immediately after she drinks in the Mayim HaMorah, it means that they're immediately taking effect in her, and she is guilty, and they fear the most dire consequences of what would happen over there if they let her remain over there. Okay. Now, Im Yesh Lo Zechus, this is something that we had quite a few weeks ago. If she has merit, then Hoyesa Toilelo. Then in that case, the merit would have an effect on her behalf. Literally, it would suspend, hang, suspend, right? In other words, that the punishment, in spite of the fact that she's guilty, would be suspended for a while, okay? And the Mishnah continues and says, Yesh Tichuz Toilo Shana Achas, there is a certain amount of merit which will suspend the punishment for a year. Yesh Tichuz Toilo Beishonim, there is merit that can suspend it for 2 years, and Yesh Tichuz Toilo Gimushonim, and there is also merit that can suspend it for 3 years. In other words, the effects wouldn't take place immediately. Okay, so naturally, what are these various Tichuz, what are these things for merit? The answer is, if she does mitzvahs and things like that, as we'll see from the Gemara, okay? But now, one of the best mitzvahs, according to the next statement in the Mishnah, is if the woman learns Torah. We'll see now. And that leads, of course, to a big machlekes, needless to say, okay? Mikan Irma ben Azai, because of this statement, namely that zechus, merit, can cause a suspension of the immediate effects of drinking the Mayim HaMa'orim for either a period of a year or 2 years or even 3 years. So Ben Hazai says, Chayav Olam Nilamed Es Bitoi Torah. A person is obligated to teach his daughter Torah. She'im Tishta, because in the event that she should drink the Mayim HaMa'orim, Teda, she should know she'azchus toilolot. She should know that merit will be able to suspend the punishment for her. So, according to Ben Azai, this is a practical reason why a woman should be taught Torah. Okay? Along comes a contrary opinion. Very famous contrary opinion, because this, unfortunately, I have to say, was the basis of why many women were denied a formal education in Torah. That's the next statement that we have in the Mishnah. This is Rabbi Eliezer's statement. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, he says, Kol hamalamed bitay Torah, brackets, ti'ilu lomdo tiflus. Okay. Which means, literally, whoever teaches his daughter Torah, obviously, is in contrast to what Ben Azai had to say. So, if we add the word ti'ilu, that it means it's as if he had. If we do not add the word ki'ilu, but we leave it out, then he's making an even stronger statement. He's saying then that he's teaching her, or she is learning, depends on how you understand the word lomdo. Technically, lomdo would really refer to her, according to grammar, because there's a difference in Hebrew between lomed, and Malamed. Okay? And remember, what did it say over here? It said, Kol HaMalamed Bita Torah, right? So it's Ki'ilu Lomdo. It's as if she learned, okay? Which is probably grammatically the more correct interpretation. Tiflis. Now the problem is, what is the meaning of the word tiflis?
It could be both ways too.
Right.
Malamed, he teaches it and she learns. So
yeah.
It could be
all right.
The combination.
Right.
Too.
Okay. I'm going to say, I'm only saying from the point of view of grammar, since there is a difference between malamed and lomed, right? So the lomdo could be understandable. Of course, if it said lomed, then they wouldn't have any question in their mind, okay? But lomdo, it might possibly mean that he is teaching her, he's learning her, you know. It's like in English, the word learn. It's on the, at least among Yidden, you know, the word learn becomes a synonym for teaching. Not just learning, but teaching, right? The Anglo-Saxons don't understand that, okay. But we Jews, you know, learning to us is not just learning for ourselves or learning from teachers, but it's also what the teacher himself does. So teacher is learning. Okay. All right. Question, as I said, is what is the meaning of the word tiflis? This is the crucial word, okay? There are two possible interpretations of the word tiflis. One of them is to take the interpretation that Rashi gives over here. Namely, that tiflis means zinus. In other words, he's teaching her literally, you know, how to commit adultery. Because, in other words, what did Ben Azai say? He said that, you know, if he teaches his daughter Torah, it will suspend the punishment. Okay? So that Rabbi Eliezer comes and contradicts Ben Azai by saying he's teaching her tiflis in the sense that she'll learn, you know, how to get around things, you know, by virtue of the fact that she's learning. This is one interpretation. However, it isn't necessarily the interpretation. Because we have a different meaning of the word tofil. Gemara in Brachas, for example, speaks about if you have two foods that you're eating simultaneously, okay? One is considered the ikar, which means the important food, right? And the other one is considered tofel, which means secondary in nature, okay? Not as important. So the question is, you know, what is the bracha that you make? So the answer is mevorech al ha'ikar, right? You make the bracha for that which is considered the more important food. Upoter, and you're free of making the bracha for es ha'tofel, for the, you know, that which is secondary in nature. So, if we understand tiflis in this sense, then tiflis means that if you're teaching your daughter Torah, you're teaching her something which is not as important as some other things that you could have taught her. This is a possibility. The truth of the matter is that this is a problem that they've been struggling with, you know, throughout the generations. I don't have to tell you that even by the time of the Rambam, who codifies these things, he prefers the second interpretation as compared to how Rashi understood, you know, Rabbi Eliezer's statement. And in his opinion, a woman should be taught dinim, she should be taught Bible, she should be taught, you know, all those things that are necessary in order to learn how to be a God-fearing person. These are things that should be taught to a woman. She doesn't necessarily have to occupy herself, let's say, with the study of Gemara, okay? But other things she should know, okay? So this is how Rashi takes it. Needless to say, in our own time, people such as the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, or the Chofetz Chaim, Zichroinam Levracha, and many others have stressed the importance that women should also be taught the essential teachings of Torah. Maybe not necessarily Gemara, but nevertheless they should know all the things that they have to know in order to be able to raise, you know, to maintain a Jewish home, to raise children who should be Yirei Shemayim, And of course, needless to say, that they themselves also should be imbued with Yirat Shamayim by themselves. And to know this, you have to have the education necessary for that. This is the reason why, for example, when the Beis Yaakov movement started, there were those in the Hasidic circles, for example, who were opposed to it at the beginning. Okay. To me, it doesn't matter. I mean, if they don't call it Beis Yaakov, but they call it Beis Rachel or Beis Rivka or Beis somebody else, you know. Right. Yeah. All right. But the truth of the matter is that even Satmarer and so on, needless to say, they have their schools also for girls. And whatever name they give it, they can call it, as I say, a Beis Sora, a Beis Rivka, a Beis this, a Beis that, and so on and so on, a Beis Chana, you name it, you know, okay? But nevertheless, they are giving, the girls a curriculum which, in large part, is going to resemble that of a Beis Yaakov.
Can I tell you, the First World War Poland, when the girls didn't learn, they used them in the comic. The boys go with Payas and the girls go with
Schrift. Yeah.
It was
unfortunate. If you go back to an earlier period, right? I mean, they talk about Hasidim.
Because you used to like the Jewish girls in the
Schrift. Hasidim who were busy, teaching their daughters, piano and French and things like that, but not teaching them Torah. I mean, needless to say, they did not make for great Yiddishkeit or anything like that. There's no question.
Tell a story about piano, Master Herzl. Of course, it must be the 17th, early 18th century.
Yeah.
And the girl was at home, just like it should be, and a couple of people came in and wanted to see the master of the house, and he was sick, and they brought him downstairs. She saw something fishy with the boys. He started playing piano, something about the gunner. He caught on to it. In effect, they never knew.
Really?
But he caught on to it. Looking for mom and her husband, her mom with us.
Okay.
Situation, the men are very learned and are capable of teaching their sons and are present at nighttime when they need help with their homework. But in our situation, in this modern day world where men are not always women are required.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And today, every kid going to a school needs help with homework. Yeah, but the pile on is unbelievable.
I think from day one, the thinking should have been, and even the Torah says that the mother is not required to go to shul, let's say, on a holiday. I read that somewhere, because it's important that she's taking care of the children.
Yeah, well, obviously, the care of the children takes priority over.
She's the main force in bringing up the children.
Absolutely.
And she also teaches the children.
Of course, that's my point.
How can she teach them properly if she doesn't know
this part? That's why she has to know.
All right, well, we're not through.
Yeah, we're not through with the Mishnah, first of all, and secondly, we'll see what are some of the things, how the Gemara looks upon it, too. Okay.
Okay.
I think also maybe it would be good to review the Rashi over here, too, to the Mishnah, because it'll serve as a reminder, a review of, various points that we've already made in our explanation. Okay. Along comes Rabbi Hoshua. And he adds his two cents concerning this tiflus, which, if we take it in the first sense, it means, a desire for sex, okay? He says, Rotzo Isha Bekavet Tiflus, or Siflus, yeah, not syphilis, God forbid, Matisha Kabin of Frishus. He says, a woman prefers to have only a kav. A kav is a measure, right? And here what it denotes is the fact that, the husband is not going to make a great living for her. But nevertheless, she'd be willing to have just, enough to get by on, provided that she has, a loving husband with whom she can share, marital relations. Rather than to have a lot of geld, in other words, tishah kavin, in other words, nine times the amount, right, ufrishas, which means, abstinence, so to speak, for from there are no marital relations. Okay? So this is what Rabbi Yeshua has said. Okay. Hu haya omer, as long as he got started, another favorite statement of his. He would say that chassid shoyta, a chassid who is a fool, a foolish chassid, v'rasha orum, and a rasha who is very smart, wise, cunning, right? The isha prusha, and a woman who acts as a Pharisee or something like that, that requires more interpretation. Well, makos prushim, literally, and blows that are given to prushim. Now, what does this mean? According to one interpretation, this means that this person, right? He submits to all kinds of mortification. Let's say, like fasting, like being beaten with a whip or something like that. Yes, right. So he says, Hare Elam Avaliyam. These are people who are wasting away the world. In other words, he doesn't approve of this. He's afraid of people who are, let's say, outwardly religious, but inwardly are not. This is what he's afraid of. All right, let's take a look right now at what Rashi has to say over here, because as you can see, Rashi is going to expand upon our interpretation of the Mishnah. All right, so we'll start. First of all, he says, Megillah, so Nignesis. You see where Rashi is, must listen over there, right? He says, okay, B'tzidei Ahechol, right? One side of the sanctuary, but as you'll see, there's a different reading. You see that little star over there, and you see next to it in the margin, it says Betzire, which is probably the more correct one. Because Betzire would mean like, literally, where the Tzir HaDelet is, this thing, the door revolves with, okay?
Behind the door.
Yeah. Not behind the door, but, like the sockets and so on. In other words, where the door turns, okay? It has to have a hole, right? It has to have a hole where the door post is, so that the door can be firm over there. So it says that over there they had a hole wherein water could be spilled. So this makes more sense. Because... Megillah Sonignesis, right? It's going to be hidden away, in other words, not to be used anymore, but then it says the Mayim Mishpachim, if you remember, that the water has to be poured out. So this is where they poured it. All right. So this is what Rashi is saying. That the Tzirei HaHechol, he says, why? The Chol Kisvei HaKodesh, and then he adds, that all sacred writings, She'en Arui and Likros Bahen, which are no longer, you can no longer read from them. I mean, let's say there's a letter obliterated or whatever it may be, or in the case of the Megillah Sota, right, where she said, even before the became completely obliterated, Eini Shosa. So what are you going to do with it? After all, it does contain God's name and everything else. So it has to be hidden away. Shelo Yisbazu, in order that they will not be treated with contempt. I mean, this is the reason why we have what we call the Geniza, right? For example, what we do, we have this box outside over here in the hall in which we drop material, and then once in a while it's buried in order to make sure that sacred writings are not going to be treated with in this respect, right? And then what did we say? We said that the ashes, that is the mincha, has to be scattered al beis hadeshen. Shehiba Zora says it is located within the temporal precincts. She saw from some sulei kodesh kodeshim ufesulei emorim. There in the beis hadeshen, they burn. Kodshei Kodoshim, in other words, the most sacred sacrifices, however, which have become possible. As for example, a person may want to offer a chatas, right? Chatas is considered kodshei kodashim, an oilah, something. But whatever the reason is, it becomes disqualified for whatever it may be. It may be because they didn't have the right intention. It may be because they were going to take, let's say, the chatas and decide to eat it outside the temple precincts, whereas it can only be eaten, you know, within the temple precincts by the Kohanim and so on and so forth. So whatever it may be. So if it became possible that in that case it was burnt, because obviously, but not burnt on the altar, because that would be a kosher sacrifice. So what do you do with these which have become disqualified? So you burn them in the Beis Hadesh. Okay. And the same thing happens to Psulei Emurim. The Emurim, as we said, these are the parts taken from Shlomim, which have to be, some of them are offered up on the Mizbeach, as for example the Chelev and the Dom and the Chelev. I mean, essentially this is what it is. I mean, it's offered up Yeseres HaKoved, there's a special loaf upon the liver, so these have to be offered up on the altar. And then, of course, you have other emurim which are given to the Kohanim. But we're not talking about what's given to the Kohanim right now. We're talking, you know, to these things that are an essential part of the sacrifice. Because, as we said, with Shlomim, there were essentially three partners involved. Partner number one is the Mizbeach. So that you burn the Chelev and the Dam and the Yeseres HaKoved. Part number two is given to the Kohanim. What are they? We have the Shoka Yomin. The chatzayat nufa, the shok is the right leg of the animal is given. Okay, not the fore, but you know the hind leg. All right, that's the shok, and also the chest, the breast of the animal is given to Kohanim to eat, and then the rest of the animal is consumed by the people who are donating the you know the sacrifice. Okay. Whether it's a Toda, whether it's a Shlomim, whatever it may be, okay? And then, so what happens if something happened to make the Korban possible? Then in that particular case, it's burnt also. Shemechitzosam lifnim inakloyim, he says, the mechitz, in other words, the wall of the Beis Hadeshin is still within the temple area, kedamin mishidas kochim, as we say in the Gemara, this is shidas kochim. This is the Gemara in Zvachim. Okay, shlosha beis hadeshen hay. It says that there are three actually places where they burned them. The hoil, the kotra, nichli, nisrefes b'azora, the high mispazeres. Okay, because. If it was already, you know, it had become sanctified by being put in...